Thank you, Duncan. Good morning and welcome to our first quarter update. As you're aware, the start of 2014 has been characterised by a number of regulatory and budgetary announcements, which I believe will have a significant impact on our industry. So we've extended this session to a webinar format and we'll cover the following. Firstly, our Q1 trading update, which shows continued good performance in the UK, but a more challenging environment for our international businesses. Secondly, our view of recent market developments, in particular the budget, where actions are underway to refocus our retirement income business on our existing mass affluent customers. And thirdly, impact on guidance, where VNB will be lower, but we reconfirm cash emergence, and hence our dividend policy is unchanged. I'm joined by Tim Tookey, our CFO, and he will now kick off with the Q1 trading update. Tim.
Thanks, Andy, and good morning, everybody. We've seen a robust performance overall, led by a good UK performance, where VNB has been maintained with strong sales growth. This is driven by strong performances in both protection and corporate benefits. Retirement income, despite the budget announcement, has maintained volume, reflecting the strength of our engagement with our existing customers, albeit this has been delivered, as expected, at lower margins. The Heritage Division continues to make good progress on a number of initiatives, including the second phase of the With Profits Annuity Transfer Programme. In the International Division, results have been disappointing as a result of both challenging market conditions and the uncertainty caused by the potential sale of Lombard, where discussions are ongoing. Moving on to slide 4, let's look at these results in more detail. Firstly, you will remember that as part of our 2013 full-year results, we set out a new financial framework. This aligned our focus towards a view of the group split between insurance and asset-based businesses, and this slide looks at our insurance business. Firstly, our protection business has had a good first quarter, delivering APE of £24 million and VNB of £16 million, both up 33% on the first quarter of 2013. This growth has been principally driven by the individual protection propositions, although it is right to recognise that some of the increase reflects the slow start to 2013 trading following the gender-neutral pricing changes at the back end of 2012. In addition, and notwithstanding this good start to 2014, activities in our estate agency partnerships where employees are undergoing retraining in advance of the mortgage market review, and an internal review by the protection business of its propositions to ensure customers receive appropriately priced products and support, will probably mean that full-year protection VNB will be lower than that delivered in 2013. In the retirement income business, first quarter sales have been maintained at £15 million APE. This is a good performance when compared against an industry-wide and increasing trend, even before the budget, for customers to defer retirement decisions, and this shows the clear strengths of our customer engagement model. The budget has had only a small impact in the period, partly due to the timing of the announcement itself, but also reflecting the fact that despite our decision to temporarily suspend processing of annuity applications on the day of the budget, many of those customers decided to proceed with their annuity purchases. Indeed, of those customers in the process of purchasing an annuity when the budget was announced, 48% have confirmed their desire to proceed with their annuity purchase, and a further 37% remain undecided. And Andy will go into our thoughts on this in a moment. In FPI, shown here excluding the non-core businesses, the first quarter reflects both difficult market conditions and aggressive competitor activity. As we reported in our year-end results, regulatory changes continue to be a factor in the North Asia region, with this resulting in the whole unit-linked insurance market falling by around a third. This business continues to make good progress on the development of the international platform, although this has hampered product development. Replatforming of new business, a key enabler for this business to service its customer needs in these markets, is on track to be delivered at the end of the third quarter of this year. Looking on the next slide at the asset-based businesses. Well, the first quarter has been a strong period for the corporate benefits business, with net fund inflows and regular premiums received growing in the period. Movement in assets under administration are shown top left, and net fund inflows amounted to £0.2 billion, which offset negative investment return in the period and maintained assets under administration at £20.1 billion. As can be seen on the top right chart, this has been the strongest quarter for net fund flows for over a year. Momentum in the first quarter has been good, with auto-enrolment-driven growth resulting in 187 schemes enrolling in the quarter, contributing to a net increase in overall members of 70,000. This performance is reflected in sales growth of 49% to £162 million APE, and in the 6% growth in regular premiums received in the first quarter to £468 million. Our expectations for this business remain very strong and are being supported by the increasing volumes being written. And, of course, the budget changes further underpin the value of having a substantial DC pensions business. And our large customer base here is immensely important to the future market dynamics that Andy will cover shortly. Moving on, Lombard has had a more challenging start to 2014, with the combination of a traditionally low sales quarter and the continued uncertainty around the proposed sale of the business, resulting in a lower first quarter premium income and, as a result, net fund outflows in the period. Having said that, the pipeline of new business inquiries is looking very healthy, but it is far too early to form a view on what that may mean for future trading levels. I'll now hand you back to Andy.
Thanks, Tim. I'll now move on to talk about the recent market developments and how we're responding. I'll start with the FCA legacy product review, then briefly mention the DWP pension charge cap before focusing on the budget. While we await further clarity on the precise scope of the FCA legacy product review, from what we've seen in the FCA business plan, this review seems a sensible area for them to look into. However, the key point I want to make is that one of the main reasons for setting up a dedicated heritage division is to ensure that customers in legacy products are treated fairly and provided with good outcomes. All too often in my 26 years in the UK life sector, I've seen management teams actively pursuing new business and not giving appropriate consideration to customers in legacy products. Hence, we set up a dedicated management team with this as a key specific objective. This slide also sets out some more facts on our heritage business. For example, the fact that half of the business was written post-2000. It also sets out some of the specific processes we have in place to ensure the fair treatment of customers. So we consciously have no cross-subsidy with new business. We have very strong governance in place, including our customer committee, regular product reviews, and active risk management. And we take specific actions to improve customer outcomes for our customers, including the strategic partnership with Schroders and the migration of legacy products to modern platforms. We believe we're well placed for this review. Moving on to the DWP pension charge cap on slide 9, we welcome the clarity and confirm that it has limited financial impact. In particular, we expect no material impact on sustainable free surplus or IFRS operating profits, and we expect a relatively small one-off circa £50 million non-operating impact on MCV. I therefore want to focus on the impact on the budget on slide 10, which repeats on the left-hand side two of the charts from our strategy presentation at our year-end results the day before the budget. But they still remain very relevant in setting out what we think is happening at a market level, the top chart, and our focus within that, the bottom chart. So starting with the top left chart, we do not see any material change from the budget in asset flows at a market level. For example, we still expect £23 billion to flow into retirement income, and we still expect this to more than triple over the next decade. However, there will be fundamental change in both customer engagement, as they consider their broader range of options, and in the proposition choices they use in retirement income. And these changes are likely to have a major impact on the UK life sector into the medium term, in particular, increased importance of scale. In terms of the impacts on Friends Life, the bottom left chart sets out each of the businesses within the group. Firstly, we expect no significant impact on our heritage and protection businesses. For corporate benefits, where we're the number two player, we expect this to be positive, as this market is likely to grow more rapidly, and in particular, it's logical for customers to decumulate on the same platform used for accumulation. Given our scale position, with $20 billion of assets under management, this leaves us very well placed. While the market for bulk annuities on longevity swaps may get more competitive, as we set out at the full year, we continue our work to consider entering this market and will ensure rigorous financial discipline in our decision making. The retirement income market is the one where we expect the most significant change. While the drivers of growth are the same, and our 1 in 9 retiring DC pension customers is an ever bigger asset, two key areas will change significantly. Firstly, customer engagement and guidance will become all the more critical to help customers understand their wider range of options. And secondly, customer proposition choices at retirement will broaden significantly. These are two key areas I want to focus on, customer engagement and guidance and customer proposition choices. And I'll start with customer engagement and guidance on slide 11. This slide shows our maturing pensions in 2013 split by customer engagement, or channel if you prefer. Understanding this customer segmentation is critical in the new world. So less than a third of our customers by funds have an active IFA relationship. They are typically high net worth, and you can see that our retention here is currently very low. Our key focus is on our existing mass affluent customers who do not have an active IFA relationship and are unlikely to pay fees for IFA advice. This is over two-thirds of our customers by funds, both what I've called direct here, largely from Heritage, and worksite from our corporate benefits business. Currently, the vast majority of these customers buy annuities, either directly with us or via a non-advised annuity platform for their open market option. In the future, they'll have a much broader range of options and hence will have a high need for guidance. Given, as I've said, they're unlikely to pay IFA fees, we will proactively engage them in a dialogue so that they can make an informed choice. The key message here is that customer segmentation is critical in looking at how the market will play through. As we covered at our full year results, our biggest strategic asset is our very large existing customer base, where we have 1 in 9 of the maturing DC pensions in the UK and 1 in 7 DC savers. Our focus is on our existing mass affluent customers, both from Heritage and corporate benefits, and helping them work through their options. So that's the first area, customer engagement and channel. Let's move on to the second area, customer proposition choices, on slide 12. The left-hand side of the chart here again looks at the Friends Life 2013 maturing pensions, and this time splits by the proposition choice that was made. The right-hand side gives our view of how the propositions might develop post-budget, recognizing, as I've just said, that we still expect the market to triple in the next decade. So if we start at the bottom, the dark blue element on the left is those customers that bought an annuity with Friends Life. So this is the 34% of funds that we retained, as we covered in our year-end results presentation. Moving across the slide, we only expect a small reduction in guaranteed annuity options going forward, given the typical uplift is substantial. We do, however, expect the non-GAO annuity market to reduce by 50 to 70%. Moving up the chart, while drawdown was a very complex and relatively small part of the market historically, the biggest area of growth going forward is what we call here flexible income. For those customers who choose not to buy an annuity, they will want much simpler propositions so they can take a regular income from their accumulated pension fund. In particular, they'll want to do this in the most tax-efficient way, and hence a proposition offering both a pensions-based vehicle alongside an ISA and ensuring tax-efficient switching between the two will be key. Given the new rules, it seems likely that customers will be stickier, provided the proposition meets their needs. Again, we start in a good position with a market-leading corporate wrap platform, and we have already kicked off the work to extend this for our individual clients. Our partner in this market, FNZ, already powers many of the other leading individual platforms in the marketplace. Hence, we believe we can develop a good proposition from our already strong base. We'll also be taking a number of short-term tactical actions, including opening drawdown and pension consolidation products, to ensure our existing customers have options and choices now, as well as building on our strategic partnership with Schroders to develop new fund propositions for customers in all distribution channels. Again, rigorous financial discipline will be key in all our proposition development. Finally, at the top of the chart, we're already seeing a significant increase in the number of customers delaying their retirement decision. We expect this to increase further. Our substantial scale means that it's Friends Life that gets the benefit of the ongoing annual management charges when our customers delay, and more time to build deeper relationships with these customers ahead of them making their retirement income decision. Combining all of this with the previous slide, the key point to take away is that while many of our competitors are focused on the high net worth IFA market, we are refocusing our retirement income business on our existing mass affluent customers who have different needs and are unlikely to pay IFA fees. We will help them work their way through their options and what they should do, and then offer them the right propositions to help them deliver this. And with that, I'll hand back to Tim, who will cover impact on guidance going forwards.
Okay, thanks, Andy. So now I want to see what all this means for our previous guidance. And I'm going to start on slide 14 by going back to our March full-year results presentation and look at the free surplus emergence from our 2013 UK and Heritage in-force book, shown here on the left-hand side. You'll remember that this highlighted the £39 million uplift in expected returns in 2014. As I said at the time, the increase in 2014 expected return is driven by about £20 million uplift from each of our UK and Heritage divisions. And what we can also say now is that this uplift includes about £4 million from our 2013 annuity sales, and that same £4 million is split roughly 50-50 between GAOs and other annuity sales. Now, this is all locked down, and nothing in the budget changes this runoff or the £39 million promised uplift. So does anything in the budget change our overall view of our ability to grow cash generation going forwards? Well, the answer is no. Remember that annuities were only expected to account for a modest part of annual expected return growth. And even then, we expect to continue to see a high take-up by customers of annuities supported by GAOs. And, of course, we do expect to see some benefits from customers delaying their retirement decisions. As a result, we still expect to more than offset the runoff of our 2013 in-force book in the short term through a combination of the delivery of profitable new business in the UK division and heritage initiatives. In the medium term, we will broaden our retirement income and retirement savings propositions to support our existing substantial customer base and thereby grow cash generation. I am therefore confident that in the longer term, the contribution from these new propositions, together with returns from businesses which are unaffected by recent announcements, will exceed the in-force runoff. Moving on to slide 15, and reflecting on the full suite of performance ambitions that we set out in March, the majority, as shown here, are totally unchanged. The exceptions to this won't surprise any of us, and with reduced annuity sales, we don't see the 10% VNB growth ambition as achievable in 2014. Similarly, the achievability of an open insurance new business IRR of 15% is also challenged by the shift in mix away from annuities. We will, of course, continue to maintain a strong capital base at all times, and we remain confident of delivering our cash today and return measures ambitions over time. With this in mind, let's move on to slide 16. And here I again draw your attention back to a slide we showed you in March. Our dividend policy, as we set out in March and which is shown here on the left-hand side, is unchanged. Put simply, the current dividend is of course safe, and our overall confidence of achieving 1.3 times SFS coverage to allow the board to consider a move to a progressive dividend is similarly unchanged. And with that, I'll hand you back to Andy.
Thanks, Tim. So a quick summary before we go to Q&A. The budget will have a major impact on the market as a whole. For us, it's positive for corporate benefits, no change for heritage and protection, and we're refocusing our retirement income business on our existing mass affluent customers by further enhancing our customer engagement and broadening our range of propositions. And as Tim has just covered, While there will be an impact on VNB, we do not believe there's a material impact on cash generation, and as a consequence, our dividend policy and our confidence in getting to 1.3 times coverage both remain unchanged. And we'll now move to Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind and decide to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted locally. And our first question today comes from Andrew Crean of Autonomous. Andrew, please go ahead.
Morning all. I had three questions, actually. Firstly, the statistic which you gave on your legacy book or the heritage book that half the business was written post 2000, is that a figure based on the embedded value or on sales figures? And if you could give us a sense of the embedded value component pre 2000, that'd be interesting. Secondly, you've expanded on the fact that you need to bring in new products and platforms for this sort of broader retirement world. Could you talk a little bit about the costs, additional costs of setting up platforms in this new world, and whether you're continuing with a sort of open market annuity strategy? And then thirdly, I realize that you can probably just pass this question off, but the sale process for Lombard is extended now for 6 months. And I wonder whether you could give us some sense as to what's going on, whether there's been any hitches, whether there's a single or multiple people that you're talking to, and whether those are the same people that you were talking to at the beginning.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. So to your first question, the half of the heritage business being post 2000 is on a value in force basis, so embedded value basis. Secondly, in terms of the new products, and the key point I'd make is that we already have a market leading corporate wrap platform that has a very strong pensions vehicle with an ISA alongside that, and that's powered by FNZ that power a number of the both corporate and individual platforms in the marketplace. So the work for us to take that corporate wrap platform and sort of take away the corporate bit of it and make it individual is not that significant. So at this stage, no change to the guidance we gave at the year end that we expect the sort of 10 million impact on the investment in new business numbers and the 15 million higher development spend. We haven't obviously worked through all the detail of this yet, but at this stage we're not changing that guidance. You mentioned open market options for annuities. We'll continue to participate in that space, but clearly expectations are lower as a result of the budget. In terms of the Lombard sell process, I mean, to repeat what I said before, when the leak happened last November, we were in the very early stages. The process is ongoing. We've had a number of interested parties through that process, and as soon as there is anything to say in terms of either a deal being completed or the process isn't still ongoing, we would have an obligation and would clearly update the market so that the process is ongoing.
But are there multiple interested parties at the moment?
Don't want to comment further at this stage, Andrew. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to do so. The process is ongoing. At any stage, if it isn't, we will tell you.
Right. Thank you.
And our next question today comes from Andrew Sinclair of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Andrew, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. First question on corporate benefits. The margins seem to have fallen despite higher volumes. I just wondered if you could tell us a bit more about why that was and whether we could expect higher margins in the coming months here. Secondly, I wonder if you could just tell us a bit more about what's going on in SPI with the regulatory changes and a tougher competitive environment. Should Q1 be seen as the more sustainable level going forwards for new business here? And thirdly, just with the recent changes and regulatory announcements, does that change your thoughts on M&A? Thanks.
And Andrew, it's Tim. Why don't I kick off by responding on the corporate benefits. Look, we're delighted with the performance of corporate benefits. 187 schemes enrolled. You know, growing our substantial customer base by 70,000 when actually having a substantial customer base really is critical going forward with the post-budget changes. In terms of margins, this is what we had expected to see with the margins reflecting the growing volume coming online from auto-enrollment. And so that this business is performing satisfactorily, for me, very satisfactorily. Of course, you know, the VNB measure and the margin, it's nice to see that we're still writing business profitably. I'm not sure everybody else is in the market. But remember what we said back in the spring with full year, we were really focusing on the net fund flows and the growth in assets under management as being the more important metrics for corporate benefits business. So delighted to have seen that the first quarter was our strongest quarter for well over a year in terms of net fund flows, and I think that really shows the you know, the participation choices that we've made are correct, and we're growing that business profitably, and I think that the market dynamics for that business are just getting stronger.
Okay, and then I'll take the second and third ones. Andrew, good morning to you too. In terms of Friends Provident International, I mean, it has been a disappointing first quarter. The three drivers is a tough regulatory environment in Asia for unit-linked products. In particular, for example, the unit-linked market in North Asia, so it's a Hong Kong-based region, North Asia, is down about a third. And ultimately, a lot of that business is actually going to more conventional type products rather than the unit-linked products. So it's a regulatory driver there. What then happens is we've seen increased competitor activity, commission deals, and ultimately, as ever, we would maintain our financial discipline and not chase volume. But that's had an impact there. And then finally, as we said with our year-end results, our key focus here is to replatform this business onto its own platform that will work with Asian time zones, currencies, and languages. That work is progressing well. As Tim commented, we expect to have that up and running by the end of the third quarter for new business and then migrate the existing book across during the rest of this year and into next year. But ultimately, the consequence of that is we haven't been doing any product development activity because we've been focused on that platform work. This is an IFA market that likes their product features, so that's had an impact as well. Moving on to your third question, I mean, as we sort of covered at the year end, you know, first and foremost, what we're doing is looking to drive the cash generation from our heritage book and from the UK division, recognizing that, you know, the significant majority of our new business is actually coming from our existing customer base. So most of our corporate benefits new business is coming from our existing schemes, and obviously our retirement income business, both pre and post budget, is primarily focused on our large existing customer base. So that's sort of the first element of what we do. We do think that pre-budget there were drivers for consolidation, and we think we've got a distinctive capability that can drive incremental value beyond that baseline for shareholders. What we've seen post-budget is many commentators suggesting that there will be further consolidation in the market. If that turns out to be the case, then we believe we have distinctive skills and capabilities to drive strong value for shareholders in that environment.
And do you think the investigation into bank books has any effect on your desire to do that?
Obviously it will be good when we get you know, the more detailed clarity on the precise terms of reference, which we would expect to get in relatively short order. But I think at the end of the day, you know, that the FCA have been running thematic reviews in different parts of the market, numerous ones over a decent period of time. And through all of that, M&A activity has still happened in different parts of the market. So, we wouldn't see that as a showstopper.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
And our next question today comes from the line of Greg Patterson of KBW. Greg, please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yeah, morning, Greg.
Morning, Greg.
Three questions. One is competition in protection and corporate pensions. I know you didn't want to talk about the VNB margin, but clearly there's been something that's gone on in those two lines versus our expectations. So, you know, just if you can give us a trajectory, competition getting harder or at the same level or getting worse in those two lines. Second thing is, I wonder if you could, you know, there's commentators out there wanting the cap to drop to 50 basis points. Is the 2017 review, there's a new trustee, transparency rules, blah, blah, blah. You know, the trajectory for the cap is likely to go down. I wonder if you could venture a guess the impact if the cap dropped to 50 basis points on your free surplus generation. And the third one is Schroders. You haven't been forthcoming on the benefits in terms of free surplus generation of Schroders for 2015. Could you enlighten us on what they are? Thank you.
Greg, hi, it's Tim. One, I'll take the first bit, if you like, and then pass over to Andy.
Sure.
So in protection and corporate benefits, look, I think those both remain competitive markets. So, you know, your question around competition and margins, they have been and do remain competitive markets. I think you saw us being particularly disciplined last year in how we participate in those markets. And, you know, financial discipline goes through us like a word through a stick of rock. So we will conduct ourselves, you know, in a very disciplined way at all times. In terms of the margins that we've seen, you know, we wrote profitable new business in corporate benefits last year, and we continue to write it profitably now. And that, of course, is reflecting the relatively low and level of contributions that are coming with auto enrollment business. You know, a lot of this is coming in at 1+1. Type level of contribution. So to be writing profitably at that level when contractual increases are coming down the pipeline in a couple of years down the road really is very sensible and very disciplined execution of our strategy. In the protection space, I mean, the margin is down a bit in the first quarter. I guess Q1 versus Q1, this is predominantly a mix effect. Primarily the mixing group protection business that we've written in the first quarter. So we've written more life business, less critical illness. So there's a bit of a mix driver there. But that's, of course, affecting the PVNBP to value of new business margin. If you just look at the sales, then sales and profits are both up 33% for protection this year. If you looked at it Q4 versus Q1, well, remember in Q4 we said at year end that we'd restructured our reinsurance programs in protection, so the Q4 margin was the strongest quarter by some way last year, and that clearly was a one-off as I flagged at year end. So I think that probably gives you hopefully a bit more insight into the margin trends there.
Just a question, how can a reinsurance renegotiation be a one-off? And in terms of auto enrollment contributions. You've got competitors out there saying that their experience in terms of take up and contributions for auto enrollment have been very positive. There seems to be a reason why yours is bad and theirs is good.
The restructuring of the reinsurance contracts was completed in the fourth quarter. But there was some backdating effect of that back into the earlier quarters of the year. But obviously, I'm not going to go back and restate profits. So we had, if you like, a catch-up benefit in the profit footprint in the fourth quarter, which distorted or uplifted the margin in the fourth quarter for protection. I don't understand your comment on auto enrollment and what others are reporting. I seem to think that others aren't reporting profits at the quarters in terms of value of new business, and I'm telling you that we're writing our business profitably when I can think of one other listed player who openly admits they're writing loss-making business and they're looking to reduce the losses that they write on it. We wrote profitably last year, Greg. We're writing profitably in the first quarter. We've seen a net increase of 70,000 in our scheme members. We've auto-enrolled more schemes in the fourth quarter than in any quarter of last year, and I'm expecting Q2 to be even more again. So I think you'll find if you're looking for a company that's writing business in a disciplined way, you're speaking to us.
Right, so the bottom line is competitive forces, say, second half last year versus first half this year are the same.
Yeah, I believe so. But I think what you'll get with Friends Life is a disciplined approach to how we operate in very, very competitive markets. And so when pricing doesn't mean that business can be written profitably, we will stand back from that. Exactly the same as Andy was responding to Andrew Sinclair a moment ago about what's been happening in FPI, and the competitor activity in FPI is throwing more commission at stuff, and we're not, because we want to write business in a disciplined manner or not at all. And you'd want me to do that from a shareholder value perspective, and I'm not going to, you know, Andy and I won't let the business chase unprofitable, cash-destructive, value-destructive sales just to have a high sales number. I've never seen anyone pay a dividend or meet shareholder returns out of sales. You meet them out of profits or cash generation.
All right, cool. Thank you. And then the 50 basis points cap, how would that impact your free surplus generation?
Sure. So we haven't and are not disclosing any kind of specific numbers around that, as indeed others haven't. But I think just to give you a sense of it, I mean, I think it critically depends on how, you know, if that were to happen and how it plays through. If you take, for example, our corporate benefits book, you know at the moment that that trades on average at roughly 60 basis points. But within that 60 basis points, you've probably got about 10 basis points typically of commission. So you can kind of take that out of the equation, because you know any sort of charge caps would be on a nil commission basis. That then those schemes that are higher, that's typically driven by people making the investment choices for the higher costing funds rather than the more passive based default funds. So it would depend, you know, if it were to happen and how it were to play through. But I think that, you know, hopefully gives you a sense of that. In terms of Schroders, we haven't disclosed the free surplus benefits. Obviously, today this is we're doing two things today: basically a Q1 trading update, and also giving you an update in terms of the recent regulatory changes. But what I can tell you is that a number of our team have been working. In fact, they had a big workshop yesterday with Schroders, looking at the fund options that that we should be developing for clients in a new world. So. You know, we do view the Schroders deal as a key strategic partnership to power the or give us further options around powering the fund management proposition for our clients going forward.
So, will it be material or not material, the benefit?
We haven't commented, Greg.
Bank insurance deals in Asia.
The point I would add is that you know we have in all 60 to 70 billion of discretionary assets within Heritage, obviously, you know, some with F&C, more with AXA IM, and you know, so in the medium term, think of it in the round of those, then you know you can get to quite significant numbers.
All right, cool. Thank you.
The next question comes from Alan Devlin of Barclays. Alan, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, guys. Actually, just first of all, a quick follow-up on the last two questions. Is value of new business a useful measure for corporate benefits? You know, what does it assume in the contribution levels? You know, do they tick up in line with as auto enrollment contribution levels tick up, or is it just better to look at the net flows number as to see how successful you are? And then just secondly, on the international is obviously weak this quarter. Does that have any impact on your view on what the dividends from the international operations will be, assuming you didn't sell them? Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. On your first one, look, VNB is a less relevant measure for a corporate benefits business than the fund flow metrics that, as we set out in March, but it is still a measure that reflects on the financial discipline that one applies to writing new business. Importantly, then, you're making a very, very pertinent point in asking about the contribution levels, because we only assume in there the current level of contributions coming through from employers and employees. We do not factor in to that value of new business the benefit that will come in 2-3 years' time when the rates contractually rise for those who are today paying a minimum of 2, being 1+1. To a contractual total of 8. So while all the setup costs are incurred And obviously, your value of new business has to reflect sort of inflation assumptions on the cost base. You don't take account of the uplift that will come in contributions from it. That benefit is to come down the track, and we'll see that in due course in pickups in fund flows. So therefore, very pleasing to have seen net fund flows turn positive and give us our strongest quarter for over a year. And therefore, if you can write business profitably when contribution rates are low, it does bode very well for what will happen to the momentum in the business over time. You then asked me a question on international, and I've completely forgotten what it was.
International dividends.
Well, no, we have not changed our guidance on our international dividend targets, but clearly, Alan, with trading as it was in the fourth quarter, things are going to be a little bit tougher to extract. But no, I'm not dropping the targets. What I won't do is drop the financial discipline that underpins the new business that we write. So yeah, clearly Q1 says it's tougher, but no, the target for dividend repatriation is unchanged.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
The next question today comes from the line of Ming Zhu from Canaccord. Ming, please go ahead.
Good morning. Three questions, please. First, M&A criteria and the strategy you could share with us in terms of the size and the backbook mix, what you would prefer. And the second question is on slide 12. You mentioned you are going to offer income drawdown products. I just want to know there are a lot of players in the market out there already offering those products for a longer time. What is your advantages in competing in this market? And the third question, in terms of retirement income's cost base, is it largely fixed or variable given that volume is coming down? Thank you.
Thanks, Ming. Good morning. So to your first question, in terms of M&A criteria, what I said back in March was that when I was asked the same question, probably by yourself, Ming, actually, I said that we'd only just started getting a team of people to start working on this. That team of people have actually focused very heavily on the impacts of the budget in the last 6 or 7 weeks, as you might imagine. So nothing further to add in terms of M&A criteria from what I said at the year end. Key message is that we're confident on the cash generation of the business going forward from here without any M&A activity, and hence the dividend policy as we talked about, and we would only consider M&A activity if it was incremental value beyond that for shareholders. Taking your second question on slide 12, I think the key point I would land is that that in the current world, it's basically the high net worth individuals with their IFAs and wealth advisors that are doing the drawdown business. And the drawdown business in that world is a very, very complex, complicated product with lots of features and options and benefits and very complicated rules on how you can take the income, driven by the current environment. And that's why basically mass market customers haven't done it, because ultimately it's too complicated and expensive and difficult for mass affluent customers to do. So we actually see this customer segmentation is critical, splitting the high net worth advised by IFAs on a fee basis from the mass affluent customers. With the new rules, drawdown becomes much, much simpler. You're just going to take an income from your pension pot in a tax-efficient way. And actually, the kind of competition ground is not about the features and bells and whistles of the product. It will be in that high net worth segment. That's not where we're playing. Where we're playing is in the mass affluent segment focused on our existing customer base, where ultimately the propositions will be pretty simple and straightforward, and the whole focus of that is going to be about engaging with the customer. For our competitors to target those customers, I think the acquisition cost, given the size of funds involved, will be quite challenging. Ultimately, we have that relationship with them already, and I think that the proof point or evidence that I'd point to on that is our Q1 individual annuity sales were flat year on year. When even before the budget only impacted the last couple of weeks, even before the budget, most of Q1, basically lots and lots of customers were delaying their retirement decision. Now, and as I said before, customers that delay, given we've got one in nine of them, we'll just keep taking the annual management charges. That's a you know, that's positive from a cash perspective for us. But while many of our peers have been quoting their individual annuity sales in Q1 down 40%, 35%, ours have been flat. The key driver of that is the strength of our customer engagement. We've been working hard on engaging with our customers. As we talked about in our full-year results in March pre-budget, we've been working hard on engaging with those customers, and that's why more and more of them are staying with us, and hence our performance in terms of holding the sales flat in that market environment is very strong indeed. And so the real edge is having that existing customer base. And ultimately, these mass affluent customers, they're suddenly presented with a broader range of choice. They're going to want someone to talk to about it, and we believe we're very well placed to serve their needs there. Tim, do you want to take the retirement income cost base?
Yeah, I will do. Although actually, while you were talking to Ming there, Andy, I was jotting down some notes to answer the question, and actually a lot of them are going to overlap with what you just said, because obviously, Ming, part of the cost base is fixed and variable. The variable element has really been focused on the customer engagement. And in the short term, that's been ensuring that customers who are in the process of making an annuity purchase, that where we press the pause button on budget day, we wanted to make sure those customers fully understood the choices that they now had and wanted to go ahead with their purchase or not. But the most important thing for our team was to make sure customers were understanding what their choices were. In the medium term, I see that team continuing to being important as we engage with those mass affluent customers over their broader choices. So if you're worried about the fixed and variable cost base from an impact on profitability if individual annuity sales fall as we in the market expects, then I'm not worried about that, because that team, I believe, we will be able to redeploy and use their very strong customer engagement skills in the new world with the broader propositions. So I'm not quite sure I've added much to your answer, Andy, but I've certainly covered Ming's question.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Marcus Bernard of Oriel Securities. Marcus, please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, guys. Thanks very much for your slide 11 and 12. I think they're very clear in understanding where you think the retirement market's going to go. I suppose the question's on worksite, the 35% of your annuity sales. I mean, do you feel these customers are much more influenced by their employer and the scheme set up into what they do and might be less aware of their options as they come up to retirement? Do you think this is perhaps a market they'll continue to take annuities or I don't know where you think that's going to go? And I suppose linking on from that, we haven't heard a lot of people talk about what DB pensioners are going to do as a result of budget changes. I mean, I think a lot of them have quite valuable defined benefit final salary pensions, but clearly if they've got options to transfer, to take full drawdown, to do things, any thoughts on how that could offer opportunities to you guys? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Marcus. Good morning. So I'll take your second question first in terms of DB. There are two main areas that the Treasury are consulting on. One is this unbiased guidance, and the other is what to do around DB. Ultimately, I think it is more likely that the conclusion will be that customers can't transfer from DB to DC and then take the greater flexibility. If they're able to, clearly for major DC players such as ourselves, that will be a significant positive. But I wouldn't bake it in. I think it's more likely that the conclusion of that consultation will be that people in DB have to stick with their DB benefit rather than have the option to transfer it to DC.
Well, even though they could take a transfer value at any time.
Yeah, but I think that opportunity will end up getting closed off as a result of the consultation, and the interaction I've had with the Treasury suggests that's likely to be the case. But let's see how it plays through.
Okay.
There's at least neutral, and potentially a significant positive. Yeah. If you look at in terms of what happens in the worksite, so basically you've got kind of three categories within that. First of all, quite a bit of our corporate benefits business is actually people who have left their employer, and therefore they're no different to the direct customers. The employer is no longer involved, and we just deal with them directly. You've then got those employers that do take a, you know, sort of a more paternalistic view, and generally speaking, what they put in place is a non-advised open market option for their customers. But they tend to use that non-advised open market option, which is why the sort of the retention numbers are lower in the worksite than they are in direct, because more of that is going through the open market option. So those employers are likely to say to their employees, you could still do your open market option, or you've now got this option of the drawdown. I think the key point there, though, Marcus, is if they've already selected our corporate wrap platform, our worksite platform for the accumulation phase, you know, I mean, it's far, far easier for everyone, far more straightforward, that the decumulation is also done on our platform. So we think that business will be particularly sticky. The sort of third chunk is those employers that don't take that paternalistic attitude, and therefore, again, that effectively becomes direct as far as we're concerned, and we'll engage directly with those members as they come up to retirement, and make the engagement offer and the different proposition options that we've talked about. So I'd see those three kind of buckets, but you know, and all of this is the driver of why we, you know, with a combination of that and then people delaying decisions, is why we're, you know, really comfortable that cash generation isn't impacted by this. But VNB will be, because when people go into drawdown or indeed they just delay for a number of years or a period of time, you know, we're not going to capitalize all of that for 25 years into the future in VNB, which is what we do on annuities currently.
So I guess going back to your options 2 and 3, I mean, do you think employers are likely to be fairly neutral in what they advise or say, well, here's some advice, or push them one way or the other? I mean, it's difficult to know what's going to happen on those fronts.
I mean, I think it's highly unlikely that employers will decide they ought to push their employees towards either annuities or towards drawdown. I think what they'll want to do is to make sure that their employees have access to decent quality products. And the point there is, if they want to go down the annuity route, they'll give them access to a non-advised OMO type scenario. If they want to go down a sort of a drawdown type route, but they've already selected what they think is the best pensions platform with their existing pension provider. So the logical thing would be to use that into retirement from there. Equally, I mean, you might find some, but I think very few would pay for their employees to get advice, and therefore I think you know, our sort of guidance offer that we'll be developing and working on, I think we'll have a significant opportunity in the worksite.
That's very interesting. Thank you.
And our next question today comes from the line of Abid Hussain from Societe Generale. Abid, please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Thanks. Just one question on strategy, please. I was wondering if you have given any thought to closing any business, given that it's now an increasingly difficult place in the UK to operate, and perhaps the 200 million odd capital that you deploy into new business towards seeking out backbook deals, which may be of better value for shareholders.
Okay, thanks, Abby. Good morning. I think the key point I would make to this is that within the UK, the majority, well, two key points I'd make. The first is that we apply the very clear discipline of no cross subsidy between heritage and open businesses, and therefore, you know, we run heritage to meet the ongoing needs of those customers, but to do that in a cost, capital, and tax efficient way. And then we are very disciplined and conscious about where we reinvest any of that cash from the in-force book back into new business. Last year, we had a 15% internal rate of return. You know, so relative to other players, our new business is a smaller proportion of the group relative to the in-force book, partly because of that financial discipline of where we would choose to play. But what I would say is that the majority of, in the UK, the significant majority of our new business is actually from our existing book of customers in terms of increments and new entrants to our existing corporate pension schemes and then the retirement income market. So I think if you sort of looked at the kind of, should you close to new business, you're always going to want to do more activity with your existing customer base. Yeah. And ensure you'll meet their ongoing needs going forward. If you don't do that, they'll go away elsewhere to meet their needs. So we won't be closing to new business, because ultimately the majority of our new business in the UK is coming from our existing customer base, and that's it's selective as to what we do. It generates a strong internal rate of return on that business. And in particular, it's a critical part of the persistency and maintaining those customers into the medium and longer term.
I guess you're saying that you need that infrastructure, new business infrastructure, to service the top-up business, if you like. And so you may as well sort of play in that market, I guess.
Yeah, so if you take for example, our heritage business, you've got a customer in there, gets to age 55, they've got a pension pot with us. They may have one or two elsewhere. If we engage with that customer, we've got a chance of getting them to bring their other pots into us and to keep them into their 70s. If we don't do that and we just say, we're closed, we don't do any of that at all, you're going to see an increasing proportion of those customers consolidate pots away from us elsewhere. You're going to see impacts on persistency, impacts on the embedded value. I think that the critical point I would make is the amount of capital that we are redeploying into new business in the UK is a relatively small proportion.
Okay, thanks.
And we have a final follow-up question from Greg Patterson of KBW. Greg, please go ahead.
Apologies, Lebs.
Greg, this is a fourth question. It's always three.
It's about a fifth. I doubled up in the other ones. Yeah. Just in terms of your drawdown product, are you considering adding a longevity swap, GAO, to that? And if you do, will it be a lifestyle underwritten one, or will it be a more standard rate?
So we're currently working on exploring these options. Haven't made firm decisions yet. I guess my view, Greg, is that the budget is a fundamental change for the industry. Probably the biggest I've seen in my 26 years. And actually, I think what you need then is to be quite considered and think through the implications of that and how that will play through. I think understanding customers and obviously with 2 million DC savers, we're very well placed to do that. Understanding customers and understanding their needs, I think will be critical. So yes, we do expect to offer propositions to customers in all distribution channels that leverage our strong fund management options together with Schroders, together with our longevity expertise. The exact form that takes, time will tell. We're exploring a number of options and, researching and testing those as we speak.
I was just thinking, because you've invested money in your lifestyle medical underwriting proposition, and you've also invested money in your hedging capacity on the with-profit books and heritage. So, you put those two together and you get a guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefit or guaranteed minimum income benefit. So is my thinking the same as yours?
Yeah, I think exactly. We have a lot, we have all the core capabilities that one would need to develop those propositions, and they're likely to be attractive to customers, and we're working on exactly as you suggest.
And when could we expect an announcement?
Next update will be our interims in August.
No, I mean product development announcement to the market of the new proposition.
Yeah, as and when we develop and work things through. But what we're seeing in terms of customer behaviour is significant delay from customers. So I think what's quite likely this year is that the majority of customers will be waiting until they have the full flexibility post the budget next April, and this year will be a year characterised by significant delay. So rather than rushing out lots of things quick and dirty in the very short term, Our focus is more on understanding where our customers are at and what they want, and then developing those propositions for them for the new world.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any final questions, or we have
another further follow-up question from Andrew Crean of Autonomous. Andrew, please go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just interested to know two things, really. Firstly, what the average case size of your GAO annuities are. And then secondly, quite a lot of your commentary about the guidance process, I think, is based on the assumption that you will be providing the guidance. There is a chance that, in fact, it'll have to be independent guidance, not supplied by the company. And I think the FCA, in its annuity review, was quite firm on the issue of companies providing guidance and guiding people into their own product. Could you comment a little bit about why you think you'll be able to sort of guide people into your own products?
Yeah, I'll take the second of those, and Tim will take the first in a moment. In terms of the second, we do expect there will be unbiased guidance, and our view, Andrew, is that that should be provided by an independent third party. But ultimately, I mean, and Steve Webb, the pensions minister, was commenting on this recently, that's only going to be a pretty high level helping customers understand that there's an option of an annuity or there's an option of a drawdown and you need to think about the tax efficiency of it. So we would encourage that, and we would encourage all of our customers to go along and get that sort of 15-minute type chat and that unbiased guidance. That, in my view, is going to raise more questions than answers, and they're then going to want someone to talk to. And our dialogue with the FCA, and I was down there twice this week on this very topic, amongst others, our interactions with the FCA suggest that they absolutely recognise there is a need for something between the sort of the full advice, fee-based advice, and the execution only. They fully recognise that there's a need for that post the budget. And so our expectation is that there will be customers will get that bit of unbiased guidance, that 15-minute chat. They'll have a load of questions as a result of it, and we'll then be in a position to put in place a guided process for them to help them understand their options from there, part of which will be to offer our solutions. And I do think that at the end of the day, you're not going to write annuity business going forward unless it's pretty competitive relative to OMO. But I do think if you go down the sort of drawdown route, that becomes much more of a relationship-orientated engagement and less of an out-and-out who's got the lowest basis points on their platform. I think it will be much more about the customer feeling comfortable that you're helping them understand their issues. And and if that platform's at 55 basis points rather than 50, is that really going to be a big deal to them? So we need to see how it plays through. But I can't see these mass affluent customers paying IFA fees, and I can't see the unbiased guidance, giving a full advice suite. And neither can the people I talk to in terms of the regulators or politicians. Tim, do you want to take Andrew's first question?
I haven't actually got an average case size on GAO annuities for you today, Andrew. Sorry, I haven't got that data to hand.
Is it small though? Because the threat to this is that people just take cash on.
Well, we do think there will be an element of increased cash uptake, but actually I think that's going to be far more prevalent from those customers who have got non-GAO vesting pensions. I mean, the average uplift that we saw last year from customers who had a pension with an embedded guaranteed annuity option was way over 40%, and that is a very valuable benefit for those customers with those pots. So that's one of the key reasons that we see probably only a 20% reduction in GAO-related sales, and that 20% is, just as you're expecting me to say, focused on the smaller end of those pots where people would just take the cash because the 40% uplift isn't very many pounds or pounds per month. So
I do see the GIO market shrinking considerably less.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Andrew.
We have no further questions on the telephone line, so I will hand back to you for closing comments.
Thanks very much indeed. Well, thanks everyone for dialing in. As we've said, you know, probably three key messages to take out of today. In terms of the Q1 trading update, we're pleased with the progress and performance in the UK. International is more disappointing, challenging environment there. In terms of the regulatory changes, the key ones are budget, and I think the key point I would make is our primary focus there is on our existing mass affluent customers. We think we're very well placed to help them understand their broader range of options and deliver solutions to support that. And a consequence of all of that in terms of guidance is that, yes, we do expect value of new business to be lower, but we remain confident in terms of our cash generation, dividend policy unchanged, remain as confident as ever of getting to our 1.3 times cash coverage of the dividend. Jana and the IR team, and as well as Tim and I, are around obviously all day today, so if any of you have any questions at all you want to follow up on, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Thank you very much, everyone, for dialing in. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.